Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. It is my pleasure to speak to Jess Osrow about how growth stage companies design and implement strategies to build high-performing teams. Jess gets stuff done and has the energy of four people. Her goal is to create fundamental change in people operations. As head of learning and organizational development at Quartet Health, Jess empowers organizational culture to be inclusive, diverse, and promote equity for all employees. So many companies talk about culture, and it's so hard to actually pinpoint what culture is, right?
100%. Yeah, culture, the thing that founders forget, and any organization forgets, is that culture exists whether you create it or not.
If you are not the one creating the culture for your company, then your employees will bring it from, you know, your previous experience or from just what they feel like, right? So if you're not intentional about creating your culture for your company, then someone else will create it for you.
And I think the key word you hit on there is intentional. You have to be intentional. So having the intention to continually take action is always going to be the key.
Jess, tell us, how did you get started coaching startup founders?
How did I get started? So I've been in the HR and tech and learning and development space in New York City for the past 9 years. Ultimately, I have limited filter and I'm very much a no BS kind of person and tell it like it is. When you look at data, when you look at data points, when you look at, you know, you pull up a spreadsheet, you download some information, you do a survey, it only tells so much. The other piece is actually talking to people and allowing them to tell their stories, allowing them to be honest. And that's where I gained a lot of my insight, is just being open with people and saying, I don't know. Can you tell me what's going on? How is this happening underneath my nose and I have no idea? And being okay that I'm wrong. I'm very good at what I do and I have a lot of very strong and usually correct opinions, but ultimately I have no stake in that. I have no humility if I'm wrong. And that's been the key to my success and ultimately what led me to coach founders, is that people open up to me and people share with me and I can help teach those skills and how to get in those frame of mind and mindsets, which allow founders to then do that for their own organizations.
What I found in founders, two things that you just mentioned. The first one is it's so hard for them to say that I don't know something, because majority of founders that I've come in contact with are software engineers, they're developers themselves. So it's so hard for them to say that I don't know something. So how do you get them to open up to say, I'm not sure how to do this?
Yeah. So the key is that the power of no is what I relate it back to. When you're working, there's a huge amount of power when you say, you know what, I'm not able to get to that today, or I can't do that, or we can't put that in our pipeline. So using that same concept of the power of I don't know, it's about being aware of your blind spots. You can be aware of something you don't know, or you can have a blind spot about a blind spot. If you know everything, you probably wouldn't be founding a company. You'd probably already be a gajillionaire, and you would have no need to do anything. You'd be living on your own private island, a la Richard Branson. But talk about somebody who talks about that he doesn't know a lot. I think if you look at great leaders of organizations, of countries, they're all going to be people who say, I don't know, in some form or another.
It is funny. The second thing that you've mentioned is you cannot do everything. So I'm married to a SaaS founder, so I know so much about their mentality. Yes, I can do everything myself. And if I cannot, then it's okay that if it takes me hours, days, and weeks to figure things out, but I'm so used to doing things myself and I'd rather do it myself because someone else is going to do it at 80% while I will be the one doing it at 100%.
It's really hard because as a founder, this is your baby. This is this creature you've developed and brought into this world. But if you're going to excel at the things you are a master at and that you do know everything about or the majority about, you have to hire people to do those other pieces. And it's really hard to let go. And that's where coaching comes in. That's where you say, every week I want you to identify a blind spot and I'm going to identify one of my blind spots and we can go about it together. You can run those paths in parallel with people. But admitting and knowing and being aware of what you don't know, having that self-awareness is so important. And if you try to do everything, you're going to fail at everything. There's not one single person who can do everything successfully. And that's just the nature of life. You're going to burn out and then your business goes nowhere.
If you find yourself saying, only I can do it the way that I want it to be done, then I think that's your ego talking. Not maybe 100%, but that's much better for the things to be done, you know, this week or next week, rather than to wait for you to do this in 6 months.
Yeah. And can you imagine a world where you say, I know I can do all of this, but instead I'm going to coach somebody on how to do it in a method that I feel is right, and have them recognize a blind spot and have them bring something else to the table that might 10x what you were going to do. That person is not only going to do what I need them to do, but they're going to make it better and bigger and faster and more badass and everything. And then all of a sudden you're in a different level. So by saying, I'm going to teach somebody else and I'm going to enable somebody else's success, you're going to promote your own success.
You know what? That's one of the fears that I see founders have. If they may feel like they are not needed in the company anymore, because if someone else does things better than they did before, that's kind of, you know, a little bit of ego problem there.
There is a great article by, I believe the author's name is Molly Graham, and she was early stage at Google. She was early stage at Facebook. And the general concept is called like giving away your Legos. And ultimately, you know, you have your little pile of Legos, you play with them, you build things. And then somebody says, oh, well, we're going to hire somebody to help you. You need to give away some of your responsibility, give away some of your Legos in order to do more. And you're scared. You're like, even if you hate your job, even if you hate pieces of it, you're like, those are my Legos. Like, I don't want to give those away. But what you don't realize is you have blinders on. And the second you look over here and you see this giant pile of new Legos, you're like, oh man, there's so many more possibilities than I ever thought of because I had these blinders on, because I had this blind spot over here. And the second and ongoing battle to be comfortable giving away your Legos, there's bigger things out there. There's better challenges to face. There's more people to train. There's more things to do. There's more money to make. But you have to be okay with giving away that first set and that second set and then that thousandth set of Legos, because that's how you get bigger. That's how you get better. That's how you gain more knowledge. But it's really hard, and it is about ego more than anything else.
I find a lot of founders talk about, how do I find a co-founder? They may not necessarily want to hire someone, but they're looking for a co-founder because either they don't have money or they think that a co-founder is going to be more involved in this because they have kind of equity in this, instead of hiring someone, like even if it's a contractor or like remotely or full-time. So what do you say to people like this?
You have to start with the outcome. What is the outcome you're looking for? Is it to grow the business? Is it to have somebody who has equity and therefore is accountable? Is it somebody to just get a job done? Figuring out what the outcome is first and work your way backwards. Ultimately, whether you bring a new hire on, whether you bring a contractor, whether you bring a co-founder on, it's always going to come down to the values, the mission, vision, and values of an organization. So even if you're a solo founder right now, you need to decide in this first iteration, what is the mission of the company? What are the values of this organization? In that case, it might be my values. And where do I see it going? Because the second you go to look for a new hire or a co-founder or whomever, they're going to say, well, why should I join? What am I doing? What's the point of this? You can say, well, this is our mission and this is our purpose and this is our values. And immediately somebody's going to say, well, I actually don't agree with that. And then you can say, great, that person's gone. You don't need to even further. You don't have to waste time getting to know them or these things. If your values don't align, or the values or the mission or the purpose of the organization, you know immediately that something isn't going to work. And once you find somebody who's like, oh man, yes, I'm there. I'm with you 100%. That's where you get people who work their heart and soul and their blood, sweat, and tears go into something.
There are so many benefits to hiring remote team versus someone having, you know, working full time at an office for you. And to the founders who ask whether I'd rather bring on a co-founder versus someone who can just work for me part-time, full-time, but at least, you know, someone who I basically pay to do this. Start with hiring someone. I really like using Upwork. This is where I've probably hired more than 100 people on Upwork. There's so few things that can go wrong with hiring on Upwork versus just diving into hiring someone full-time or getting a co-founder. I think this is much more complicated. So what are some pitfalls to watch out for when hiring or working with a remote team?
Hey, I think nail on the head, there's a lot of accountability if you hire somebody. whether full-time, less so with part-time, but very much with full-time and a co-founder. It's the same thing as any relationship. There's an accountability. There's saying, here's what I'm able to give and here's what you're able to give back. What kind of relationship are you having? Equity. If you're talking about equity, that means you have to have lawyers involved. You need to make sure contracts are signed. You need to make sure that you have all of those documentation in place. There's a lot of things that can be done through contractors and using Upwork to get off the ground. You know, if you're saying, I want to hire somebody because I want to have somebody to go in the office every day and hold myself accountable, whether it's in a co-working space or in my own personal house, whatever, you know, so that person's going to help me hold myself accountable and I'm going to help them hold themselves accountable. Great. That is the outcome you're looking for. You're not looking for a specific work outcome. But even that, you might hire them as a contractor and just say, hey, I'd love to work out of the co-working space 2 days a week.
What is a high performing team? And what is the difference between a team that is performing versus a team that's not performing?
High performing team, in my opinion, is a group of people who not only get their work done, just say check, they do their work, they are invested. They want to know the outcomes. They want to further it along.
Have you read the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber?
No.
I highly recommend to anyone this book. So the three distinct roles that Michael Gerber says that are functioning within any business, the first one is leader, then a manager, and then the doer. So, and if you are the one person show in your company, then you need to be wearing all three of those hats, being the leader, being the manager, and the doer. And if you're just, you know, a software engineer, you're just doing, that's not good enough. You know, you still need to manage yourself, and then you need to lead your product, your company, right? And I find that software engineers may not have experience being a manager and a leader. Mm-hmm. And this really comes just from working with someone, like managing someone, leading the company. So if the founder is just, this is their first startup, they may not be as experienced in this. And so having those, the things that we talked about in place, like having the mission and the vision and know what you're working towards and sharing that with your team is so important. And I think that the company's founders do not implement this early enough.
Yes. 100%. This should be one of the first things you do. And mission and vision and values can grow and change. These are not stagnant things. These help give you direction. When you're, and especially if you're not a manager, especially if you tend to be more of a doer, having these guidelines, it's like if you're bowling, having those bumpers and being able to say, okay, well, I'm heading over here. Oh, nope. The values are going to send me back. Oh, the mission's going to send me back this way. And just giving yourself some guidance. Who doesn't want to have those safety nets, especially if you're investing a lot of yourself or your resources or money? So by starting out with that and just doing, it can be really basic. It's a one sentence, and maybe three values really sets you up for success later on. And it's a growth piece. And kind of jumping back to what you said about the managers, the leader and the manager and the doer. If you recognize in yourself, you can have enough self-awareness to say, you know what, I'm a really great manager, but I'm not a leader. I don't have that transformational piece about me that can really set a light on something on fire or people on fire and get them excited. That might be your first hire. If you can have the insight to say, wow, that's who I need to bring into this org so I can do these other pieces, recognizing that is really important. And that can be the difference between the time it takes to get success or not. You know, if you're a software engineer and you need a salesperson, hire a salesperson. Do not sell the thing yourself. Be part of the team that creates the sales materials. Make sure the salesperson knows the right language. Make sure they're selling it correctly. I'm not a salesperson. I can talk for days on end, but I'm not a salesperson. So if I were ever going to try to sell something, I'm immediately going to hire a biz dev person because that's not my area. And that's okay because that biz dev person is going to 10x what I could do. You know, in 1 week, they're going to 10x what I can do in a month. And that's what I want. I want sales. So I'm going to hire the right person. So having those insights, it kind of goes back to those blind spots of knowing if you're that doer, if you're that manager, if you're that leader, if you're somewhere in between, how do you get that next stage? Do you even want to get to the next stage? There are plenty of founders who all they want to do is code. That is their love. That is their passion. Hell yeah, more power to you. Have that self-awareness to say, you know what, that's just not me. And that's okay. And say that to yourself. If you have to use affirmations, that's totally fine. But it is going to be so key to know where your weak spots are or your growth areas, if you want to look at it in a slightly more positive view, and hire people who are going to say, you know what, I don't know this thing over here. Let's not know together and go out and learn it. And, you know, those people you find through your mission and your vision and your values.
What are some low-hanging fruits that you've noticed working with the founders?
People leave because of bad managers. People want to learn and grow. And if you're a bad manager and you don't know it, if people are leaving you, you're probably a bad manager.
Now, what about if they trusted the company? Maybe it's their first or second hire. It's not like they've tried 10 people and they know, people leaving me. How do I know if I'm a bad manager? Yeah. If I'm just starting out, if this is my first, second, or third hire?
Create a culture, and when you hire people, that can give you real feedback and say, this is my first venture. I'm really excited. I'm really scared. And I don't know if I'm good at certain things. So as we go along, please give me feedback. If there's a way I can be managing better, if there's a way I can be doing something better, create a culture where right away you say, I want feedback. And I plan on giving you feedback. I would suggest to anybody, take a coaching course. There are informal ones. There are cheap ones. There are expensive ones. Take a coaching course. Learn how to take an improv class. There's a great power improv. The basic line of improv is yes and. So you're in a meeting with somebody and they say, oh, this, and you're like, oh my God, that's a terrible idea. Say, okay, how can I build off of this? How can I use this? And say, yes, and how about if when we do that, we add a survey to it so we can make sure that it's doing okay, or we can benchmark what's happening. There's some really basic level things. And there's, again, a ton of meetups. There's a ton of cheap classes, free classes, resources online, Udemy, Coursera. All of these places are going to have basic management 101. Learn. Read, find a tip. If something works for somebody, try it out. Maybe it works for you. Maybe it doesn't. If it doesn't, give it a month. Try something new. Work with your team. Say, hey, team, I want to try out this new meeting style. Let's see if it works. I want to try out radical candor. Let's see if it works. I want to try out complimenting the beginning, everybody at the beginning of the day. Let's see how it works. Try things. Be transparent. Ask for feedback. Those are the only things that are going to allow you to evolve as a group, as an individual, as a company.
Completely agree, but it's so hard to admit that they don't know something, or they may not be good at something. It may be very hard for everyone, but I find that specifically for software engineers, because they are really smart people, right?
Yeah.
But it's just admitting this, that they are not good at something, is so hard for them. So that's okay to say that you may not be good at this. Help me learn this, because I don't have prior experience with that. So it's really okay.
Well, we need to start talking about intelligence in multiple fashions. And we already have EQ, emotional intelligence, and IQ, intellectual intelligence. But we also need to start talking about AQ, adversity quotient, and how facing adversity and having tough times also builds this resilience that allows founders to go on. So a software engineer traditionally has a lot of IQ in the, again, stereotypical way, they have less EQ. So again, having the self-awareness of that is key. And then having the adversity, knowing that's why, you know, some of the most successful founders have failed a number of times. We don't talk enough about how many things fail and how we talk about failure. Failure is just a learning experience, but it's really tough because it's a hit to our ego, and it all comes back to pride and ego. And if you're able to say, man, this really hurts my soul to say, but I'm not good at this. Every time you say something like that, it gets easier. Every time you fall on your face and you talk about it, it gets easier. It still hurts, but the more you can say, oh man, I learned how to tie my shoelaces and I didn't double knot it. Next time I'm going to double knot it, and you're going to not trip the next time. So you always are going to be able to learn something, but that ego gets in the way. Find the most honest person in your life when you're starting out and say, tell me where I need to grow. Not what I'm bad at, not where, you know, where I'm strong at, but where should I grow? What could I improve in? Where should I take if I'm going to take an online course or do some self-learning, what's the first thing I should do?
What about creating a job summary? How do we go about creating a description for the job, and why do we need the description? Can I just say, hey, I'm looking for a marketing person?
It's about goals. Whether you're hiring a contractor or an intern or a co-founder, having very explicit setup of a role is important. So if you hire somebody and say, I need somebody who does marketing. Well, okay. Do you need somebody to print flyers and hang them to lampposts? Do you need somebody to do digital marketing? Do you need somebody to sell something? Do you need a copywriter? Okay. Well, I don't know enough about marketing. Great. Meet with five people you know in marketing and say, can I pick your brain for an hour over coffee and figure out what I need in marketing? Because if I went to you and said, oh, I need a software engineer, you're going to give me the exact same spiel. What kind of software engineer? What languages? What frameworks? What kind of thing? Do you need a database? Do you need to sell something? Da-da-da-da-da. It's the same for every industry. So by talking to people who know the industry that you're in and what you might need, then you can say, okay, I need a digital marketer and a UX copywriter. I need somebody who can translate my tech speak into something that a salesperson can understand, because I have a salesperson on the team. So I need somebody who sits in between and then can update our website with the copy and can translate from my tech to something that a salesperson and a customer might want to read. Saying that is very different than saying, I need somebody to help with marketing. So being explicit allows your success, because if you cannot be explicit, you will not have success, or you'll have a success that 0.01% of the time.
What I found really useful when hiring, when making a hire, is to use that person to complete a smaller task before hiring, like full-time, or do even a long-term commitment. Yeah. Hire for like a short-term project or consultancy base and see if you're a good match. See if that's exactly what you're expected out of them. Because so many times people talk so much about their experience that they are, yes, they're good at this or at that. Honestly, sometimes people lie. I had experience interviewing a marketing person for a client of mine, and I have marketing background. So I specifically started asking some technical questions. The founder asked this marketing person, so do you have experience working with Google Analytics? Of course I had, but then they did not have knowledge digging a little bit deeper and asking, so how do you do this in Google Analytics? And any person who just had even tiny little experience in Google Analytics would be able to answer this question. And when that person is not able to answer that question, you know that, you know, that person is just talking more than they actually can do, right? What are some questions that we can ask those people we're about to hire to confirm that, yes, they know what they're talking about?
So assuming you've done the legwork of creating the job description, or at least creating some things you'd like them to do, accomplishments, specific projects, this is where you might want to involve friends, coworkers, former people you've worked with and say, hey, you've worked in marketing. Can you help me interview this person? What are some things you would expect somebody to ask of you? You know, go to people you trust and who you know are good, and ask for their expectations. If they were interviewing for a job, what would they want to be asked? Because it's a symbiotic relationship. And I think what you said of starting out with a small project, really important, because you're both testing each other out. The consultant or the contractor might say, oh my God, I hate this person as a boss. I never want to work for them again. And you might say, oh, they're amazing. I want them forever. So it goes both ways. And if you can find somebody really good, or if you can grow with them and learn with them, you know, that's the jackpot. There's a lot of people out there who aren't going to be a great fit. And that's where that interviewing piece comes in. And I would say, know what you want. You know, if you're going to say, okay, I want somebody to write all the copy for my website. I have all of this language and I need them to take this document full of ideas and turn it into a 5-page website. Being able to go in and say, give me an example of how you've done this. This is the exact job I need done. Having somebody walk you through the process of something, you know, that person who you're talking about with Google Analytics, they were never going to be able to walk you through the process. You know, even if they pull up, okay, how do I use Google Analytics on Google? You know, it still wouldn't be explicit enough. You want to be able to dig in and say, okay, well, tell me like how you got to that. Where did you get that thinking about it? And they might say, you know what, I just Google it. And you're like, okay, is that acceptable for me? Maybe that lowers my hourly rate another $20 down because they're still figuring it out. But I'm okay with that if I'm paying them less. Knowing where, not only what you need them to get done, but knowing where you're willing to compromise. If you get an expert and they need $200 an hour, but they're going to get it done in 2 hours, or are you willing to hire a more junior person who can get it done in 20 hours, but you're only paying them $10 an hour? Ultimately, you're still going to be paying them $200 no matter who you hire, but which way are you willing to go? Maybe you actually get more out of the junior person because they're able to do kind of offshoot tasks versus the expert is going to get it done. Find somebody in your life who does know, who has done it, who you can talk to and say, can you walk me through this process? Can I pay you to interview this person for me? You know what you're talking about. I don't. Can I pay you $50 or buy you dinner or coffee or babysit your children or your dog or whatever? Barter. If you don't have money, barter with somebody and get the expert to help you. Don't be the expert if you're not.
Even before actually making the hire, we talked about the vision, the mission. Is there anything else?
I would say know where you're going. And again, that can change. Like have a little bit of a roadmap of saying, you know, here are the next 6 months. I have this product. I'm a developer. I've coded this thing. You know, in the next 3 months, I want to get my website up and running and I want to get a biz dev person starting to scout for leads. I want to be able to create at month 3, I want to be able to create something that they can send out and start seeing engaging people. I want to beta test by month 6. And by year 1, I want to make my first $10,000 for the company. Having that outline to me is like, okay, great. I can get on board with that. I see the vision. I know where I'm headed. I know what my copywriting is going to do or whatever it is. And then maybe at month 6, you're like, you know what? We're not going to be ready at 1 year. We're going to be a year and a half. Reassess, have that conversation again. You know, maybe you need to hire different people. Maybe you realize you're making something for cats and really it's better suited for dogs. And all of a sudden you're like, great. I now have this new market. this person I hired for copywriting is no longer relevant. I need to hire somebody who caters more toward dogs than cats. The people who you work with or might work with want to know these things. A customer is going to say, well, where do you plan on being in a year? So setting up that allows people to set expectations correctly. And that's why you need that specificity when hiring somebody, is all about expectations. Because if you're going to build a grand vision for somebody and there's no substance, you better have a roadmap on how to get to that grand vision. Otherwise, it's useless.
I really like the idea of the roadmap, because so many times when the founders already have a new person who is starting or working on a specific task, they may assign just one specific task. And this person may not know where does this small task fit into the macro level of the vision where we're actually going. But when that person would know, okay, this piece fits here and this is the actual big picture of where we're planning to go, I think it may be just so much easier for the person to make those micro decisions that the person may not even ask the founder, right? Do I choose this software or that software? But when the person knows that, okay, our goal is this, and this software is going to work better. So just making those small decisions is going to be so much easier.
And anytime an employee or somebody who isn't you, and even yourself, knows the impact of that work, what is the impact of writing the copy for the website? Well, it's going to help the salesperson sell things. What is the impact of reaching out to 100 customers? Well, you know, funnel metrics, you're going to reach one sale. What is one sale? That could be your first $15 million. So knowing the impact of the work that others are doing and how it comes together to build, that's part of building a high-performing team. They want to know how their input goes to the bottom line and how it's going to propel success. So if you can always tie things back to that roadmap, tie things back to the impact, tie things back to allowing somebody to feel successful in their role, whether it's a contractor, an intern, a full-time, a co-founder, they need to know that impact, because the impact is going to show success. Whatever it is, knowing that impact is the biggest part for motivating an employee and delegating and being a good manager.
Can you share your ideas about onboarding? I find that so many founders, all right, okay, so they make a hire, they have a task, and then you go do the task without properly onboarding the person. What needs to be included in the onboarding?
Make it so they can see where things are headed. And the onboarding might be a day, but have a 30-day check-in, and then have a 60-day check-in, and then have a 120-day check-in. Make sure that they feel that they're actually with you. Making sure that somebody knows all the tools, somebody knows the outcomes, somebody knows the input, somebody knows what impact they're having. Somebody, you know, if you have a roadmap, share the roadmap. If you don't, say, will you be a part of developing this roadmap? But somebody wants to know where they are and why they're there. And if you can't do those basic things and onboard them with your mission, vision, and values and your roadmap and what their impact is going to be, they're not going to stay long. That's just a fact.
What I find is many founders may not have enough time to properly onboard people. I'm doing like a job of 10 people. I don't have time to, you know, speak or have lunch with that particular new person. Yeah. So what I find works really well is think about hiring the person well in advance when you need that person, so that you can take those little steps, creating those documents or instructions or SOPs. So for example, when you're doing a task that you hope that one day someone else is going to be doing, it's not going to take you any extra time than maybe 5 seconds clicking on the record button and explaining what exactly, how do you actually accomplish this task, right? So that later, when a new person comes in, you don't need to actually sit next to that person and teach that person, but actually you just, all that you do is you send this recording and you say, okay, and then after you watch this video, let's talk about your questions or where it may not be clear. I find it so much easier when you have those things prepared and you have them structured. For example, day one, this is what I expect the person to do. And then boom, for every task, you have a quick outline of the video, how you've been doing this in the past. Sounds good. Thank you so much for your time. It's been my pleasure talking to you. So there you have it. Here are a few things I wanted to sum up for you. Create your mission, the vision, and your values. This is the culture. Things to include in your values. How you want your customers to be treated. Do you want people to take initiative and encourage them to make mistakes, as long as they learn from those mistakes? Or would you rather for them to not make any mistakes? This is all the things that you can include in your values. The vision is your roadmap. Where exactly do you expect to, you want to be in the next 3 months, in 6 months, and your mission is really a statement of like 3 to 5 sentences why your company exists. Number two is create your job summary and specific responsibilities that the person will have. Number three is how will you measure the success for this position? Set up the goals for each role and make sure that you have those meetings to check the status on those goals. I recommend setting up the meetings so that you have standing meetings on your calendar. So let's say once a week, once a month, once a quarter, so that you check on those, on the progress, and you don't forget about those meetings. Number four is onboarding. And this is very important. This is the reason that I see employees leave. Don't make mistake of not having proper onboarding. Communication guidelines can be part of onboarding, for example. If you want to outline that, hey, we're assigning tasks in this system and we're using Slack for immediate communication, but don't expect for me to respond to your immediate messages. I respond to your Slack messages, for example, once a day between 9 to 12 p.m. And this is going to set expectations as far as communication guidelines. Onboarding, I really recommend for you to start recording and documenting the way that you are doing those tasks that you envision this new hire is going to do for you, so that you don't just explain them, this is how you do it, 1, 2, 3, but you actually show how you are doing this. And be sure to mention that they can improve your way of doing this. If you think that this is not an ideal way, ask for them to provide some input there. And number five is your role as a founder will change. As soon as you make your first hire, your role as a founder will change. So you need to decide if you want to keep working the number of hours that you initially planned, or with your additional responsibilities being a manager, you will inevitably spend more time managing people as well. So decide whether you want to increase your working hours, or if you want to keep them the same, then just make sure that you're going to be able to achieve less things just because you need to do those regular meetings with your staff. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the SaaS Boss Show. If you found this content interesting, I'd really appreciate it if you take just a second to leave a review on iTunes so that founders just like you can learn about this show. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, and I'll be back with another interview next week.